This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Early childhood education has been a major focus for researchers and policymakers. A new working paper from the Upjohn Institute for Employment Research in Kalamazoo takes another look at pre-kindergarten programs. Researchers say that rather than studying what pre-K programs could do under the right circumstances, they are looking at what those programs have done in practice over the last 20 years. Tim Bartik is a senior economist and Brad Hirschbein an economist with the Upjohn Institute. They are co-authors of the working paper Pre-K in the Public Schools, Evidence from Within U.S. States. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Where does this study pick up where perhaps others have left off?
Other studies have found strong long-term effects of pre-K, not just on test scores during the school years, but also on things like high school graduation rates, college attendance, adult earnings, whether people have problems getting involved with crime. But those have mostly been at relatively small-scale programs. And they almost always have been in programs that are clearly attempting to be high quality and that they're spending a lot per student. They try to get certified teachers, you know, relatively modest class sizes.
And they're also targeting particularly disadvantaged students.
Right. And this study is looking at instead programs across the country that are funded by states and school districts that vary quite a bit. I mean, some of them are high quality. Some of them are very modestly funded, may have high class sizes, the teachers may not be certified in the same way, may have lower credentials. And so we're really looking at pre-K as it's actually has been implemented as it has expanded across various states, with some states having high quality programs and other states not so much.
What's that overall track record if we were going to try to sum it up of pre-K programs, those that are publicly funded?
The research on publicly funded pre-K programs is still relatively in its early stages. It's not nearly as well developed as the research on programs that are much older, the ones that Tim was talking about, that have been around from the late 60s or early 70s. And so those programs have been studied very extensively well into adulthood and have generally been found to have positive effects on the students lasting well into adulthood. The research on publicly funded programs is much more recent, mostly because publicly funded programs haven't been around as long. Many people of my generation, and I'm in my late 30s, I still wasn't exposed to public pre-K. It wasn't really around yet. It was just starting to get developed, and it's more recent than that. But many of the studies have been kind of all over the map. Some have been found to actually have a positive impact. Many of them, I should say, actually do find a positive increase right after, at the end of pre-kindergarten or at the very beginning of kindergarten. But it's very typical that any sort of gains, and we're generally looking at things of test scores or some sort of relatively early math or reading skills. Most of the studies have found that there's a fade away of the gains that generally occurs in the early elementary years. And so it's not at all atypical to find that there are no effects remaining. There's no difference between students who had participated in public pre-K programs and those who had not by, say, third or fourth grade. And some of the higher quality programs that have been studied, they find that there's still an effect, but it's less than it was earlier on, right at the end of kindergarten. But the Tennessee case, for example, which made quite a few headlines about 2 years ago, was generally finding that even though there were effects at the end of pre-kindergarten, it had faded away entirely by fourth grade and perhaps even reversed, so that the students who had actually participated in the public pre-K program in Tennessee were actually doing less well than the people who had not.
So we have this thing that this recent literature that finds mixed results. As Brad said, you know, Tennessee found zero or even negative effects by fourth grade. On the other hand, there are some very positive effects from Boston's pre-K program, from North Carolina's pre-K program, from New Jersey's pre-K program. There are some pretty good studies of those programs, which are publicly funded at a large scale, that show positive results. So part of what we're trying to do with this study is look at pre-K in virtually every state. It's most of the states from 1990 to the present, look at these public pre-K programs when they're operated at a large scale in many different states.
And it's important to do that because researchers tend to study particular programs that they think are likely to have an effect. That's why you study them. But there's been such rapid growth in public pre-K. We document in the paper from some other sources that it's gone from basically 1 in 8 students in the early 2000s to 1 in 3 4-year-olds who are enrolled in public pre-K program today. that there's not a lot of guidance as to what seems to make an effective program, but there's still a lot of publicity and a lot of advocacy in expanding them. We know that, Mayor de Blasio in New York City, for example, campaigned upon and implemented a universal public pre-K program for the nation's largest school district. And with this rush of expanding pre-K programs, we really wanted to understand what has the typical public pre-K program throughout the country actually done for the students.
And one of the interesting things you find is that districts with majority African-American enrollment, pre-K program effects are larger among such districts in high-quality states. Those increases are even better. Is this something that surprises you a little bit about what these effects might mean for African-American students?
I don't think, given the prior research, it's surprising, because there is some research that suggests that effects for students who might be more in need or more disadvantaged tend to be larger than for other students who may be able to get some of the gains that you otherwise would get from preschool in other ways, through various community programs their parents can afford or through other investments their parents are able to afford to make in them, given their time and monetary resources. So I don't think it's surprising to find that these majority African-American school districts, many of which have many disadvantaged students, and by the way, they're both, the African-American districts we look at are both urban districts and rural districts. There are a variety of school districts around the country, and we do find these strong effects in terms of percentile test score gains at fourth grade. And these percentile test score gains at fourth grade are sufficient that we would predict that these programs would easily pass a benefit cost test. In other words, the projected increase in future earnings is, you know, perhaps three or four times more than the cost, the average cost of these programs. So even if you didn't look at other effects, benefits they might have in terms of, say, reducing crime, increasing voter participation, other benefits, just the increase in earnings would give these programs a benefit cost ratio that's very good.
Mm-hmm. And I would say that that part was probably reassuring, that this is, for the most part, what previous research has found, that programs designed to take it to help a disadvantaged youth in particular tend to be pretty effective, and our results corroborate that.
You find that there are five states likely to have high-quality pre-K programs: New Jersey, Maryland, Oklahoma, Massachusetts, and North Carolina. Those are five very different states in a lot of ways. But what can we say that they have in common in terms of how they approach pre-K?
I do think that all those states do make a serious effort to invest significantly in pre-K. So they are spending significant amounts of money. In general, they're hiring certified teachers to run these programs. They're treating these programs as serious programs, that they're trying to increase students' both so-called hard skills, academic skills, as well as their soft skills, how they relate to the teachers, how they relate to other students, their self-confidence, all of which are important. I mean, no one's saying that how you score on math and reading tests is the only goal in life. We're also very concerned with whether you think you can make a difference, whether you feel like what you do matters. So I think all these states are making serious efforts to do that. Having said that, I do think, you know, one of the research questions that it's still not absolutely clear what exactly quality is a difficult thing to capture in pre-K. What is quality?
And you know it when you see it.
You know it when you see it, but yeah, so it's difficult.
And I would like to add one more thing that may be going on. It's unfortunate that we can't actually test this or confirm this, but there's been some suggestion that one of the ways that pre-K may be more effective, and we're, by the way, looking at pre-K programs that are taking place within public schools, so I think that that's worth emphasizing. But one suggestion that's been put forth recently is that when the pre-K program doesn't exist in isolation, after the pre-K year, students are transitioning to kindergarten. And if the curriculum is aligned so that the kindergarten teachers know how to deal with the students who are coming in from pre-K, who are going to be a little bit more prepared than the students who aren't coming, if there's a way to actually align that, or I hesitate to use the word tracking, but at least be aware of what level students are at, that tends to be a lot more effective in making sure that the gains are persistent. So in the states that we're defining as high quality, it may be the case that they're doing a better job of actually realizing where the pre-K students are coming from into kindergarten and adjusting the curriculum and the school environment for them to make sure that they can retain those gains, as opposed to immediately teaching to the lowest common denominator, in which case the pre-K students who are now in kindergarten may be bored and they may act out. And it's very easy for the gains to disappear when that happens. So that kind of alignment, I think, is definitely something that should be followed up on for further research.
Yeah, and no one's saying that, by the way. I mean, one of the things this implies is that no one's saying that just investing in pre-K and doing nothing to reform and improve K-12 will solve all the problems. There may be a synergistic effect here, potentially, that if you invest in pre-K in a high-quality way, and then also invest in K-12, and then also integrate the two, I mean, so that, as Brad's saying, you build on the gains made in pre-K and design your curriculum starting in kindergarten to recognize that if you're running a quality pre-K program, your kids should come into kindergarten better prepared. And it's only makes sense to try to build on that rather than ignoring that.
Yeah, if you have a high-quality pre-K program, then a low-quality K-1, 2, 3 program, it's not surprising that a lot of the gains are going to disappear.
You tell us that sometimes identifying what quality is can be difficult. What are the ways that you try to identify what is a quality preschool program for this study?
Well, in this particular program, we simply relied on, we did not want to try to just cherry pick states that gave certain results. So we relied on prior studies that have been done by groups like the Gates Foundation and others that have looked at particular states and said, based on our observations of not just looking at statistics on the pre-K programs, but looking at what's going on in the classroom. In other words, this is generally based on classroom observations. They send trained outside observers in, and they ask them to look at what's going on. Is the teacher interacting with small groups of students? Are the students engaged? What's the quality of interactions? You know, as opposed to a case where, say, the kids are all just sitting on the carpet and the teacher's lecturing a bunch of preschoolers for extended periods of time, which is not optimal preschool practice. So they try to actually look at what's going on in the classroom, and they've decided that these programs are high-quality programs. So that's what we are relying on in this study.
Quality, of course, can be degrees. It can be a sliding scale. Can you look at a preschool program and say, you know, it is of modest quality, but it is still valuable in some way, even if that value is maybe not as great as the real high quality program?
Sure. And one thing to keep in mind is that the alternative, what would happen in the absence of a pre-K program, is really important. And so one of the things that's coming about from our research is, because over time, greater options have been available for early childhood education. When the first pre-K type programs are being rolled out in the late 60s, early 70s, there was very little else out there. And people of that generation coming up, basically a family member or a family, a friend was watching you at home. There wasn't a lot of structured education. And over time, there's been a huge growth in the number of private preschools, childcare centers that vary tremendously in quality, of course. But it's much more likely that if you're not enrolled in a public pre-K program, you're doing something else where there at least is some sort of semi-structured learning environment. And so as that the alternatives have changed, the necessity for a higher level of quality to have an impact so that you can actually have a gain relative to whatever else you'd be in has become more important. So one of the things that is coming from our study is that it's not surprising that as the wonky word is counterfactual, but this alternative arrangement, as that has grown, the need for a higher quality program to have an effect shows up. And one of the things that can kind of explain why we seem to have very large effects for particularly African American districts or in the high quality programs is that relative to whatever that outside option is, that alternative, when you have a higher quality, you're much more likely to have a higher threshold and see a positive impact. And for the African American students, many of which are in very impoverished areas, that the alternative is likely to be of lower quality to begin with. So you don't even need as high a quality program to show significant gains. But we do find that if you do have a high quality program for those African American districts, the gains are even greater. So it does seem to be that as you want to climb the scale, so to speak, in terms of what's available as the alternative, quality becomes ever more important.
So, and one way to kind of summarize this is, for a state, or for that matter, a local area that really wants to make a difference for the life course of their students, the bar has been raised as to what the quality has to be. Mm-hmm. I mean, at one point, since there were almost no private pre-K or other public pre-K alternatives, any kind of program might have been enough to make a difference. Today, in today's environment, you really need to have a high-quality program if you really want to have dramatic effects. Again, that's not as true for certain disadvantaged groups, but in general, quality now makes more of a difference than it ever did if you're going to kind of be better than the alternatives.
This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. I'm talking with Upjohn Employment Institute economists Tim Bartik and Brad Hirschbein. They are the authors of a new working paper on the impact of public school pre-kindergarten programs. You mentioned that there are what you call sleeper effects that may come later down the road for these students. What are those sleeper effects?
So much of the early literature, and you actually do need earlier literature going back a long period of time to follow people 20 years or so more after they've actually been foreign in pre-kindergarten, is that I was mentioning a little bit earlier, we were talking about there's this fade out in the early elementary grades, but the studies that have been around long enough to follow up people into high school or beyond into adulthood, you find positive impacts that come back later in life, even though there appeared to be this fade out when students were 9, 10, 11 years old. And that manifests in several ways. There can be higher graduation rates from high school. There's a greater workforce attachment. People are more likely to hold down a job. And the biggest one is actually a reduction in contact with the criminal justice system, that people are less likely to be arrested or end up in prison. And those are actually huge gains for some of the earliest programs, Perry Preschool, which took place in Ypsilanti, and the Abecedarian program, which took place in North Carolina in the late 60s and early 70s, that there were actually really big effects on crime. For our case, we can't really look past fourth grade at the moment, but we have plans to follow up and look at high school graduation rates. We know that we're still finding effects in fourth grade, at least for high-quality states, programs in high-quality states, as well as for heavily African-American districts. But if our study proves to be true with what the rest of the literature is finding on this, we would expect there to be even greater effects coming back around high school graduation.
So, I mean, for example, for the Perry Preschool program in Ypsilanti, which was started prior to Head Start in the 60s, and has been much celebrated for some of the very high benefits it shows in terms of increased adult earnings, reduced adult crime rates, and higher graduation rates. That program, if you had evaluated it, if you had stopped the research back in, say when those students were in sixth or seventh grade, you would have had very mixed results to report. You would have found some slight positive effects on test scores. You would have found other effects on test scores that weren't either statistically or substantively significant. And you could very well have concluded this program isn't working. It raised kindergarten entry test scores, but it seems like most of those effects have gone away by fourth, fifth, sixth grade. And really, this program is nothing to get excited about. But the researchers were persistent, and they found that despite that, high school graduation rate effects occurred. Now, I think that means that our estimates may be somewhat conservative in terms of long-term benefits. We're finding fourth grade test score effects in these high-quality states and for these majority African-American school districts. And it could be that we'll find even stronger effects later on. Now, why would there be these sleeper effects? I mean, it's one question you could ask. What on earth is going on here? I think what's going on is that test scores are not a perfect measure of how a student is doing. And so how a student does on an IQ test, say, in sixth grade, there's a lot more to life than how you do on a sixth grade test, as everyone, I think, knows from their own experience. A lot has to do with these so-called soft skills. Can you relate to other people? Do you have self-confidence? Do you have persistence and perseverance? And that's really hard to measure. High school graduation rates actually, to some extent, measure that. I mean, because
not giving up.
Not giving up, even if you're, having problems in certain classes. You somehow figure out a way. You fail a class or you don't do well and you take it again. You do better. You persist, even though sometimes it's boring and whatever. So, yes, there's a lot more to life than test scores, and that, I think, is what these sleeper effects, these fade out and then recovery, that's what that reflects, that there are many things that affect success that preschool can't affect by building up these soft skills.
Right, and that's part of a broader point that Tim raised, that it can be really dangerous to evaluate the efficacy of a pre-K program or any early childhood education program if you're only looking a few years out and saying, You know, we're not finding much. It must be a failure. And that's not the case. That we know that the effects can take a long time to survive, to actually show up again, and still easily make it worthwhile. So it is important to do long-term follow-ups to these things, because really the test scores are just something that we can observe in the near future. But the things we really care about, you know, are these people actually getting degrees? Are they getting jobs? Are they being more successful in life? That takes a bit more time.
Tim, does that maybe go back to what you wrote about in your two books on pre-kindergarten, early childhood education, that the soft skills are maybe what truly pay off down the road in terms of the economic and societal benefit
that
we get?
I suspect, you know, you'll find that if you talk to the average employer, employers a lot of times complain about worker skills of folks they hire. And so, you know, no matter what the labor market, employers are complaining about the skills of the workers they want to get just about. And when listening to the complaints, a lot of them don't revolve necessarily about math and reading skills. They revolve around employees who either don't show up at work on time, or they don't get along with their supervisor, they don't get along with their coworkers, they don't do a good job of relating to customers, which is very important in many businesses. And those all predominantly involve soft skills. Now, I think it needs to be recognized there's an interaction between hard skills and soft skills. I mean, they're both important. I mean, so I don't think we should conclude that schools should give up teaching math and reading and just focus on personality. That would not be good advice. And they interact, because if you develop your math and reading skills, you have more self-confidence, which affects how you interact with other people. And on the other side, if you're able to relate better to your teacher and fellow students, maybe you'll learn more math and reading because you'll interact with them in a more productive way. So the two are interrelated. And that's one thing we need to recognize in education, that we shouldn't, in our focus on improving math and reading test scores, which I think is important, we shouldn't throw out the fact that schools also play a role in helping build, you know, people who are better citizens, better workers, who can work together in teams. I mean, the whole, you know, there was that old book, I forget who wrote it, you know, Everything I Needed to Know I Learned in Kindergarten, you know, maybe we learned it in preschool. But there's a lot of what school does and what preschool does that really has to do with helping people be able to work together. And any society depends upon people being able to work together.
If someone who is in a position of making policy is looking at this report, what are the things you think they should really be focused on? What are the passages, I guess, you really want them to read and think about as they're kind of formulating their ideas for pre-K programs?
One of the things about expanding pre-K is that states or localities clearly have tight budgets. There are budget crunches all the time. There's a limited amount of money to spend on education. We have steadfastly shown time and time again that that's a pretty good investment for the next dollar that politicians have to spend. Education is a pretty good place to put it. But that said, the research that we're doing is showing that if you have very limited dollars and you can only afford to expand pre-K in some areas, the areas where you should expand it tend to be areas that have the greatest amount of economic disadvantage. Those tend to be very highly minority districts. But also, if you can expand it, if you're going to try to make it universal, you have to keep the quality up. That if you try to do expand pre-K very rapidly and on a shoestring budget, it's likely not to be that effective or as effective as you were hoping. And it's quite possible that you could actually be more effective if you were to have a more targeted program of higher quality than try to stretch the money thinly and make it universal.
Right. Although it might be something you'd want to target for an entire school district, though, because as was mentioned before, you might want to integrate in your K-12 curriculum with what you do in pre-K. And if the school district can count on every student or the overwhelming majority of students entering kindergarten with certain hard skills and soft skills, that can affect what kind of curriculum they can offer. So I do think that we should recognize that you might need to do this for an entire school district. And it reflects the fact that, you know, really a state in looking at this should not be simply trying to get the number of slots up. We also need to be concerned the number of pre-K slots up, you know, which, you know, it could be popular with state legislatures or a governor who wants to say, well, gee, I doubled the number of pre-K slots or tripled the number of pre-K slots. But you always need to ask, how are you funding those? Are you able to get high-quality teachers for those? I mean, you know, if you're going to pay pre-K teachers peanuts, then what's going to happen is you will get some dedicated people who are willing to work for almost nothing to teach pre-K because they just love doing it. But a lot of folks will, you know, especially if they have a teacher certification, they might work on a pre-K for a year or two, but as soon as a kindergarten job opens up, they're off. And then you have this huge teacher turnover, which is hardly a good way to want to run a preschool with huge teacher turnover.
And I just want to reemphasize that we were looking not just at the students, but we were analyzing districts as a whole. So I think it actually is really important for the investment to be at a district level. And one of the reasons why is that if you start dividing students within a district, there can be a stigma attached to it. If pre-K is only for the poor students, then that creates a stigma associated with it. And there can be all sorts of negative effects once they get further along into kindergarten, first grade. If the entire district, if the students district-wide are attending pre-K together because it happens to be a highly impoverished or under-resourced district, some of that stigma is less and all of the students can benefit.
So as you've mentioned, you have to look out further. You got to find what happens high school graduation. You got to find what happens beyond that. What is really the next focus of research in terms of trying to figure out here what high quality preschool is capable of?
Well, I think one focus, as you mentioned, is that with our particular study, we want to do follow-up with these school districts, you know, which, as I said, are around the country or thousands and thousands of school districts. And we want to find out, are the high school graduation rates positively affected? And if so, how does that vary with the states we've identified as having high-quality programs? And how does that vary with school districts we've identified as being needier school districts or not? So that's one thing we want to do. The other thing I think that's a real challenge to research in general on pre-K is really trying to identify and measure more accurately what is quality pre-K. There's been some progress in this area, but you know, here we are calling for keeping the quality up in higher quality pre-K. I would have to think that policymakers might justly complain to the researchers, you're calling for this, you're saying it's really hard to measure. How am I supposed to, if I'm setting up a state-funded program, how am I supposed to hold programs accountable if you can't even tell me in a reliable way what quality is? And I think that's a legitimate objection to the research, that as researchers, we have not yet succeeded as well as we might like to in quantitatively identifying what we know it when we see it, but measuring it's a little more challenging.
And that's because there are just so many moving parts to picking up quality. It could be, you know, the certification of experience of teachers. It can be the student-teacher ratio. It could be the environment at the overall level of spending. It can be class sizes. It can be, you know, the number of classes in a center. It can be a whole host of factors. And isolating any one of them to figure out, you know, is this one factor really important to quality, or is it only important in conjunction with a whole bunch of other things? That's a really hard question. And so that's one of the reasons why I think it's been so hard for so long to really pin down what is quality and how do we measure it in this objective way. But I wanted to add one more additional follow-up to what Tim added. One of the other things is that we were identifying effects on average for districts. It seems to raise the average effect of all the students in a district. But one thing that may be really interesting is that the weakest students in the district may benefit more than perhaps the strongest students. Even in a district that overall is relatively poor, some of the students may be fine without pre-K and others need it really, really badly. And so we actually want to see if pre-K is having an effect by raising the weakest students more than the stronger students. And that may also explain why we find stronger impacts among the most disadvantaged districts, because most of the students in those districts tend to be near the bottom in terms of test scores, and so it's easier to raise them up. If you're expanding pre-K for a district that's already at the 90th percentile, it's a lot harder to raise people up at that level than if they're at the 10th.
Brad Hirschbein is an economist, and Tim Bartik, a senior economist with the Upjohn Institute for Employment Research in Kalamazoo. Thank you both for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
A link to their working paper on pre-kindergarten programs in the United States can be found at wmuk.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.